And you know, the end is not yet. You know, one of the things that he said toward the end of that message, of that sermon, was this. It was this. And it was basically that, you know, all these things will happen. You know, the gospel will be preached around the world. It will be preached everywhere. And people of all nations will hear me. And, you know, it doesn't say that everybody's going to be converted, but it says that the gospel will be preached. It will be preached. The word will be heard. Well, we have the privilege of being just that. You know, thanks to Mike and April and Billy, and I just can't help but thank them enough. And so many of those of you who serve on our reach team that keep our focus beyond our church. And can I just be honest with you about something? We are asking you to do something through the Easter missions offering that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. We're asking you to go totally against what your wisdom might tell you. We're asking you to go totally against what the economy right now is telling you. We're asking you to go totally against what your 401k statement, if you're like mine, you know, you've probably seen about a 40% decrease in it over the last 6 or 8 months. We're asking you to go totally against the logic that you might derive after looking at that. And we're asking you to do something that doesn't make sense. Something that requires real faith. Something that requires real faith. Because you know what? Faith is not about certainty. You see, if we had perfect certainty in the world, guess what would not be necessary? Faith. There would be no need for faith. There would be no need for hope. Because as we see, and I believe it's right there at the top of your outline, in Hebrews 11, the writer says, what is faith? He said, it is the confident assurance. It's not the certainty, but it's the confident assurance that what we hope for is going to happen. It is the evidence of things we cannot see. Do you grasp that? Do you get that? We talk about faith a lot. And we think, yeah, I'm a professing Christ followers. We say things like, yeah, I've got faith. I've got faith. But do we really have faith? You see, we're asking you to do something that doesn't make sense in light of what's happening in our economy. Also, we're asking you to do something that doesn't make sense to give over and above your regular giving, which needs to be healthy, by the way, to be a fruitful Christ follower. And it doesn't make sense to ask you this when payday for our staff is tomorrow and we still don't yet know whether or not we're going to receive paychecks until we know what the offering comes in to be today. Doesn't make sense to do this EMO thing, does it? When we're talking about stuff like that. Because why? Because our natural inclination is to do what? It's to think of our own needs first, right? The natural inclination for us all is to think, well, I'll take care. And that's, you know, we go back and there's so many psychological studies that just verify that, you know, that our first inclination is to say, yeah, you know, I'm going to take care of my physical needs and then I'll worry about this and that and the other. But that's not God's way. God's way is to talk about what are the needs of others? What have I placed you here to make a difference in, to move forward in? Well, as we do this series, as we move a little further into the series called We Are the Hope or You Are the Hope, I want you to really grasp that reality that you and I, folks, as we are members of the universal body of Christ, we are the hope of the world. Now, we are privileged to have reaches in Cambodia. We are privileged to have reaches in where Mickey Bujan is going. Mickey, by the way, and what I really love about this is that Jen and Mickey are both homegrown Integrity family members. Folks who had some of their formative years when God called them into what they're doing today while they were here. And then we are privileged to be a part of a denomination that faithfully reaches out around the world to do what they're called to do and to make sure that people hear the gospel, and we contribute that way. But you know, we've got to remember that it's not just sending funds, but that we are the hope of the world. Whether that world is right around you in your neighborhood, whether it's in our state, whether it's in our country, whether it's around the world, we are the hope. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to find somebody close to you, and I want you to look at them, and I want you to say, you are the hope. And I want you to just look at them. Just say that out loud with a big emphasis on R, you know? That was not very enthusiastic. Let's try it again. Do it again, all right? Yeah. R the hope. You know, I'm not one necessarily believes just because you speak something's going to happen. I don't believe that. But I'm very confident that what you just spoke to your friends is a true statement. It's a true statement. It is something that we need to grasp and to take account of. I'm going to be sharing with you the next few days, on next few Sundays, on what has really become my favorite Jesus stories. And they're found in Matthew chapter 14. This is the passage that 15 years ago or so, I heard a message taught about this, on these passages. And it is what really God really used to push me, to prompt me, to move me out of the corporate world and into vocational ministry. It was a leap that I still, as I look back, I'm thinking, how did that happen? But it did. Some of you were probably thinking, I wish it never did happen. But I understand that. But the stories that we're going to talk about, I believe, give us such a clear picture of what faith really is, like maybe no other Jesus stories do. And so as we go into that, I want us to start today by looking at a story which, by the way, is the only miracle that is recorded in all four Gospels. It's the only one. It's found in Matthew 14. And as we look at the story, we're going to draw from passages in all four of those Gospels to give you a really complete picture of what happened that day. Because I believe that what happened that day had significance that was so far beyond the folks that were there, and there were lots of them, we're going to see in a few moments. And they had a lot, there's a lot more significance that traces to us now and in the future. Here's the point. Without faith, we can never really trust. Without trust, we can never fulfill our calling to be the hope that Jesus wants us to be. Let's pray as we get into this passage and just ask God to bless our time. Father, thank you for your word, for we know that it's always true. Thank you for your commission to us, your calling for those of you have said, who are committed Christ followers. I've called you, you've said, to something great. I've called you to something good, to something that is going to bring hope to others. God, help us to embrace that as we look at your word in this particular passage today. For it's in Christ's name. Amen. Stephen Potts, our worship leader, not long ago had to take a flight somewhere. And of course, now Stephen has a new family. He's a young guy, you know, and his kiddies are small and another one on the way. And his wife is young and all that, you know, and they're just the cute couple. Stephen, he doesn't like to fly as much now, kind of like I was when I had my family, right? And so he had to go somewhere, and he was in the airport, and he wanted to grab a bite before he got on the plane. So he found a Chinese place in the restaurant, and he sat down and he ate. And then he had to rush because he had a little time to eat, so he ate, and he got to the jetway and got on the plane. And as he sat down in his seat, and you know, he got it buckled up, and you know, they're doing all the safety stuff and everything. And the pilot was ready, just about ready to hit it. He remembered he got his fortune cookie at the restaurant. And so he thought, yeah, what did that thing say? So now, a couple of days before, just so you'll know, Stephen, being the responsible young dad and father that he is, went out and bought him a good life insurance policy, about $250,000, which was a good move on his part, buying term insurance at a young age. You can get it really cheap, and so he did a good thing. So he remembered he had this fortune cookie in his pocket, and as the pilot was just about ready to hit it, he pulled the fortune cookie out, and he opened it up, and he opened up the wrapper and broke it open, and you know, kind of took out the little piece of paper that had the fortune on it, and he ate the cookie, and then he looked at it, and right as the plane hit it, and the pilot really looked at it, Stephen looked and he read and he found the following message: a recent investment is going to very soon pay huge dividends. Well, by that time, it was too late for him to get the plane to turn around. But here's the point. Here's the point of that story. You know, when we make a move to go somewhere or to do something, we don't always know what's going to happen. We don't know what the destination might be. We don't know if we're going to make it to the destination. But you know, we're still called to live life. as we need to live it. Well, in the purest sense of the definition of faith, as I said earlier, faith is something that's kind of oxymoronic. It doesn't make sense sometimes because we're wired to seek certainty, most of us. We like certainty. We like to get our arms around things. Now, there are others, depending on personality types, who like to live in the, you know, in the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, and that's okay. But for the most part, we are wired to where we want certainty. Many of us, we need to be reminded and coaxed into faith. The story that we're going to talk about today in Matthew 14, I believe is a story where Jesus was trying to help coax some of his friends into faith. Now, the setting, we find ourselves where Jesus has just learned about the death of a very close friend, John. John had just been killed at the hands of Herod. Now, Herod had a wife whose name was Herodias. Now, that, I guess instead of taking his last name, he kind of gave her a form of his first name, Herod and Herodias. It's kind of like, you know, Tammy would have changed her name when we got married to Bud and Buddy, maybe. But anyway, something like that. But anyway, Herod and Herodias were together. Herodias did not like John. Now, John was imprisoned, but John would always have this, he would always kind of go after Herod and say, you know, dude, you're wrong because you stole your brother's wife and you're living with her. You know, you took her. And so she didn't like that at all because she loved living in the lush, lavish riches of the kingdom there. And so she kind of thought, well, I've got to get rid of this John. So one day they had a ball and they had all the court, you know, all the civic officials and business owners were there. And so Herod, by this time, had gotten drunk and all. And so Herodias sends her daughter, Salome, who, by the way, was very attractive, by the way, and had her do a very provocative dance in front of the king and for the whole court. And so in the process, Herod just loved it. And so he says something like this. He says, well, I will give you anything you want, Salome. Your dancing just does so much for me. Oh, I bet it did. So she says, and she had already been programmed by her mother. She said, okay, what I want is the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And sure enough, Herod, who did not want to have John killed because he realized that he could have a near riot on his hands because of the popularity of the man, had no choice since he had issued this decree of, I will give you anything you want, in front of his court and all the business executives of the region. He had no choice but to do it. So John was beheaded with the head brought on a platter. So Jesus had just heard about this story from John's disciples. Jesus was pretty down. He's an emotional guy, just like all of us. You know, we're made in the image of God. God has emotions. Yep. So that's right. We do too, and so does he. So Jesus was dealing with this loss, this grief, and he had all these people that were clinging to him, that were hanging around. Now let me tell you a little bit more about that. Jesus's public ministry could largely be broken into three unique time frames, three unique years. The first of those was the year of obscurity. It's a year when people really didn't know a whole lot about him, at least at the public level, but he began a groundswell of a following, kind of a grassroots following. Folks began to follow him. Then the second year we know is the year of popularity. This was a year when he was booming. Like, he was like the favorite on American Idol. I mean, he was the one that everybody was talking about. All the water cooler talk was about Jesus, the things he was doing, the things he was saying, the teaching that he was giving. And then the third year we know is the year of opposition. That's when the folks in high places realized that he was really a threat to them because, you know what, he was exposing them for who they were. But the folks at the grassroots, were his numbers, his following just continued to grow as people would forsake all and follow him around just to hear what he had to say and to see what he would do. Well, at this point, we find ourselves right about at the transition between the year of popularity and the year of opposition. So the crowds were just, they were just growing and growing and growing. And so in this story, we see what I believe are about at least six levels of faith development. And we're going to see in this story, I believe, how the faith of the disciples changed from one level to the next. Now, I don't know where that change was. I don't know how significant it was, other than to say it was very significant. But we're going to try to plot out what they might have gone through. and try to take what they might have gone through that day, seeing this particular miracle, which again was the only one that was recorded in all four Gospels, and we're going to ask the question, how does this apply to me? How does it fit? What does it look like in my life with this particular story? Well, the first thing, the story starts in Matthew chapter 14, verse 15. So I want to go there real quickly. You've got it on your outline, so let's go there. That evening, now Jesus had heard about about John, and he was kind of, you know, Jesus was upset. He tried to get away, but the people wouldn't let him. He wanted to be off, and he wanted to grieve, but he could not do it. So that evening, and by the way, the evening in the Jewish calendar, there are a couple of evenings in a particular day, 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock, okay? So sometime during 3 and 6 o'clock was a typical dinner time, all right? That's important for us to know. So the disciples came to Jesus and said, "This is a desolate place and it is getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy food for themselves." Okay? Now, this particular statement reveals what I'm going to call the first stage of faith, which is really not faith at all. It's called disengagement. Disengagement. Disengagement is that first level, that first stage, the first stage that someone might find themselves in. Disengagement. Now, what is disengagement all, what is it all about? Here's what disengagement says. It doesn't involve me, so I have no interest in this. It doesn't involve me, so I have no interest in this. What did the disciples tell Jesus to do? What did he say? Send them away. Look, it's dinner time. You know, we don't have, what are we going to do with all these people? Soon, they're going to start a riot because they're going to be all hungry. And they're going to want, you know, they're going to be clamoring. We are out here, we're in the middle of nowhere. In the middle of nowhere. Now, do you know how many people were there that day? Probably about 12 to 20,000. 5,000 men. Now, many of them would have taken their families with them because this thing about Jesus was so significant that the whole families would follow. So we might have had anywhere from 10 to 12 to 20,000 people here that day. And no village anywhere with any, around, you know, in any kind of distance here would have had any more than 5,000 people in it populating that village. So that tells us that these people are coming from a long way away. They were far from home. And so first of all, the disciples really probably knew down deep that, you know, there's really no place for them to go to get food. But they were just in this disengaged thing. He had been teaching them, and they were like, let's get them some food. But they got to go get it themselves. It's a big deal. So it's a desolate place. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy food for themselves. That leads us to the second stage or the second level of faith. And that's what I call disbelief. You see, disbelief occurs when we recognize that there may be something there that I've got to decide whether I'm going to believe or not. Here's what disbelief says. It doesn't make sense, so it can't happen. Okay? It doesn't make sense, so it can't happen. Look, Jesus replied to them, "That isn't necessary." What did he say? What did he say? "You feed them." You feed them, Jesus says. Now again, we're talking about 13 guys at center court in the middle of the Greensboro Coliseum and about two-thirds to three-quarters of the seats filled with people. And he's looking at them and he's saying, "You feed them, guys." Here's the disciples' reaction, right? I can see them kind of thinking, maybe looking at each other and saying, "I'm waiting for the punchline." John says to Peter, I wonder what the punchline is. What's he going to say? And then I can see Jesus kind of just looking at them. And all of a sudden they begin to realize he may not be joking. Now Jesus was a funny guy. Okay, understand that. He was a funny guy. All right. But at some point they realized he's not joking. And so there, I can see him kind of getting a little nervous, a little change of body language here, you know, the position and everything, and like we got all these people like looking at us, and we're like on the spot, and you know, Jesus' voice in those days didn't need a PA system, you know, They heard what he told us. What are we going to do? So they go back and look what they say. Impossible. Impossible. This cannot happen. Here's what they said. It doesn't make sense, so it can't happen. This is where many, many people who profess Christ are living today. This is where they're living. They're living in a world. Answer a question for me. What's 2 plus 3? 5. It's not a trick question. What's 2 times 3? Many people are living today by the addition and subtraction signs. Very few people are living by the multiplication sign. They fail to remember that Jesus always brings a multiplication effect into the equation. When we allow Him into our lives, when we allow Him to have our way, His way, when we say, my way ain't working, I'm ready to go your way, God, He always brings a multiplier effect into the equation. But here's the point. We often will not let Him do that. We will insist on living in the 2 plus 3 equals 5 world rather than moving to the 2 times 3 equals 6 world where He wants us to live. So the question is, where are you today? Where are you living? Where are you living with your marriage? Where are you living with your friendships? Where are you living with your money? Where are you living with your job? Are these things that you're holding on tight to and you're just figuring, well, 2 plus 3 equals 5, when you could be living where 2 times 3 equals 6? Are you allowing Jesus to be the multiplier in your life? Because the relationship is exponential. When you factor Him in, things begin to happen. Now, can I also tell you that not everything that happens is going to be a real good thing. It's going to happen. Because His main focus is on your character and not your comfort. Does that make sense? He wants to build you into a person that's more like Him rather than being really interested in making you comfortable. Now, He will say He'll give you everything you need. And He will. He will do that if we simply give Him what He asked for, which is all of us. Oh, He's not asking for much, just all of us. Not unreasonable, right? He just wants all of us. He's God. He can ask whatever He wants. Well, in this whole deal about it doesn't make sense, so it can't happen, this is where some of the disciples were. They gave this answer probably relatively quickly. Impossible. This can't happen. You see, we have a tendency to see things in the natural, whereas Jesus lives in the supernatural. And the challenge that we have is, how, God, can You teach me to begin seeing more about where You live rather than where I live physically? It's a big challenge. It's a big thing that we've got to figure out how to do. We also tend to make excuses instead of taking on difficult tasks. Here's one thing I want you to understand. Here's a reason why I think the disciples said impossible. In that day's economy, it would have taken the equivalent of the average wage earner 7 months' pay to feed the size of the group that was there that day. So for you, figure out what that is. Figure out what that is. That'd be pretty significant, I imagine, for all of us. Well, in John 6, we see this version of the story, which I think gives us a little more illustration. It says in verses 5 and 7, Jesus soon saw a great crowd of people climbing the hill looking for Him. Turning to Philip. Now see how He takes advantage of a teachable moment here. Philip, one of the disciples. He says, Philip, where can we buy bread to feed all these people? What's He doing? He is beginning to shift the thinking of the disciples. Jesus knew that He had maybe a year here at best. He knew that soon He would be gone. And without telling them He was going to soon be gone, even though He had already been telling them that, and they just didn't seem to get it, He began to shift the responsibility for the ministry from what He was doing to the disciples. And He's basically giving them a teachable moment, an opportunity to learn here. So to Philip, He says, all right, Philip, what do you think? What do you think? Where can we buy the bread to feed these people? Of course, Philip said, well, we don't, no way we can do this. It said in verse 6, he was testing Philip because he already knew what he was going to do. Philip said it would take a small fortune to feed them. Absolutely. It would take a small fortune to feed them. Well, this encounter with Philip and the disciples, as they were now really kind of on the spot, again, 15,000 people plus maybe, looking at them down on center court, hearing everything that's going on. They're on the spot. They're nervous. They're like, oh my gosh, how do I get out of this? There's no place to go. We're surrounded. Leads us to the third level of faith. And by the way, if you're looking at your watch, don't worry about it. I know there's a game today, and I'm not going to get all the way through the outline. Okay, I will tell you that, so you'll relax. Okay. The third level of faith is questioning. It's questioning. Now, here's what happens at this level of faith. At the questioning level, we got to begin asking, you know, could there really be something to this? Again, disciples are looking around at each other thinking, I think he's really serious. This is not a joke. So what's he going to do? Now, see, they had seen him do stuff like this before. But in every one of those cases, Jesus was the one who single-handedly took care of the situation. But there's a subtle difference here. No, it's not really subtle. It's a big difference. What is it? He's saying, all right, guys, it's your turn. But you didn't put us through seminary. You didn't give us the classes that we were going to need to know how to work miracles. No, I didn't. You feed them. He says, how much food do you have? He said, go and find out. They came back and reported, we have found 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Now, of course, if you read another one of the gospel accounts, we know that they went and they found a young boy who had this. Now, let me enlighten you on these loaves and fishes. The loaves of the day were not the size of what you might buy in the grocery store. All right? They were rather more like the size of the loaves that we give to our first-time guests when they come for homemade bread. All right? Also, the fish were not likely big, fluffy flounder. Okay? They were more likely only a little larger, perhaps, than sardines. So, I mean, even if they were big, fluffy, and they were big, full loaves, the disciples, I don't think it really made a whole lot of difference to them. Because they're thinking, how are we going to do this? The enormity of this. Could there really be something to this? And see, here's the other thing. The desolate nature of the area would make this an even more compelling miracle. So I imagine the guys really got scared when he said, all right, bring them here. Bring them here. And they're wondering, okay, he's telling us to feed them. He's giving them to him. You know, they're giving us, they're taking the food to him from this little boy. Maybe the little boy goes right up to Jesus with one of the disciples. Maybe it was Philip because he's the one that had asked the question in the first place. We don't know. And so the disciples, I imagine, by this time are shaking in their boots. Here, he is beginning the process of passing the baton to the disciples. This is what he's doing. And he's using the example of physical food, all right, as a teachable moment to picture to them that they would be feeding others spiritual food. You see the symbolism, the teachable moment, the message, and as the function is passed on. Okay, guys, this is what it's all about. You will be feeding them from now on. Well, symbolism is powerful, and this brings us to the fourth level of faith that the disciples went to that day. And this is the last one that we'll cover today. We'll proceed next week. But after the whole idea of these levels that they went through, from disengagement to disbelief to questioning, they arrive at the point of decision, which is a fourth level of faith. At this level, we ask the question, as the disciples did that day, well, is there really enough here for me to buy into it? Is there really enough here for me to buy into this?
in verse 19 of Matthew 14. He told the people to sit down on the grass. And by the way, we also know from another gospel account that he put them in groups of 50. Okay? That's one thing that Jesus always does. He always asks us to do big things, but you know what? He also gives us the luxury of seeing them in manageable tasks if we will just look. See, if you heard the expression, sometimes you can't see, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees. Okay? I think a lot of professing Christians can't see the trees for the forest. We kind of think, oh, well, God must be... For some of you, that thing about you are the hope. Now, you might have engaged in that little speak to your neighbor there today. But the question is, do you really believe that? Or are you saying, well, just Bud's asking us to do it. We'll just humor him. You know, I know there's so little I can do. Can't happen. That's some of you, all that was it. That was you today. That's because you can't see the trees for the forest. You're allowing the forest to overwhelm you, and therefore that is keeping you from being able to see your trees in the forest and the trees that you're there to take care of. Well, he sat them down into groups of 50. By this time, the disciples were in for the long haul. Is there enough here for me to buy into? If you've ever done the Bible study called Experiencing God by a guy named Henry Blackaby, there's one particular part of that study that I always come back to. And that's a study, by the way, the first time I did it was when I did launch from the corporate world into vocational ministry. I did it another time. And that's when I left my youth pastor position and we started Integrity Church. I'm scared to do the study a third time. So anyway, just know that. But Blackaby calls this particular point the crisis of belief. The crisis of belief. This is my favorite part, although it's also the most challenging part of the study. Because it's almost like we got a crossroads in front of us. Not a crossroads, but a fork in the road. And we got to make a decision on how we're going to live life. It's a big decision. And at this point in the decision phase, or the level of faith where we are now, level 4, we got to make a decision. Am I going to take the fork in the road that's going to say 2 plus 2 equals 5? Or am I going to take the fork in the road that recognizes that 2 times 3 equals 6? In other words, am I going to settle for this additive value, or am I going to go for the multiplicative value? Because, you know, when you go that 2 times 3 equals 6 route, that only is going to work when you allow Jesus into the equation. And it's only going to work when you go the way that He is directing you to go. And this level 4, many people get to this point and they decide, you know what, I like life the way it is, and I'm going to go the 2 plus 3 equals 5 way. I believe that the greatest waste, and one maybe that grieves God's heart the most, are people who go all the way through life living the 2 plus 3 equals 5. As opposed to the 2 times 3 equals 6. And I believe that one day, many of us, and the number of people that are in this room that were in here earlier today, and the many that aren't even here today because of sickness, etc., out of all of us in the Integrity family, there are going to be a heck of a lot of us, more than we even want to recognize, who are going to get to the end or close to the end and look back and say, you know what? I wish I had chosen the 2 times 3 equals 6 path. Because look at what I've wasted. I'm a firm believer that we will one day be asked by God, what did you do with what I gave you? Well, God, this is what you gave. So, no. What did I do with what I gave you? You see, I believe that God's rewards are based on the proportionality of what He equips us with in terms of resources. I'm not just talking about financial resources. I'm talking about the totality of what you have. All of the gifts, the things that you know how to do, the talents, the personality. What did you do with what I gave you? There are three things that I want us to take away from, three truths that I want us to take away today from this story, and we'll continue it next week. But here's the thing that we're going to be challenged with through this whole series. And it's not an easy answer. Matter of fact, if you've already figured out where you are on this continuum, number one, you're probably wrong because you haven't seen the rest of it, okay? And number two, you're probably wrong because I don't think you can just look at something and assume, hey, that's me right there, okay? Here's the point. You're going to be challenged to ask yourself the question regularly, at what level am I? As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask you this week as a challenge, and I'm going to ask you if you'll just, we'll pray for you, and you can write this on your Connect card where it says, I'm accepting God's challenge. I'm going to ask you to commit to pray every day this week, this prayer. God, show me the areas in my life where I'm living 2 plus 2 plus 3 equals 5, and show me the areas where I'm living 2 times 3 equals 6. And God, then show me how to take the fives and move them to sixes. Here's those three things that I want us to understand. There are stages of faith development. That's the first thing. There are stages of faith development. And you know what? We're all someplace. Here's the second one. Your decisions and your behavior will reveal where you are in that development. Your decisions and your behavior will reveal where you are in that development, in that current stage. And finally, Jesus promises to reward well-developed faith. It's as simple as that. Pretty simple. We'll continue with this next week, but I want you to recognize that we're asking you to do some things that don't make sense. To show you how even more how much it does not make sense for us to step out in faith and do some crazy things, we've put a little survey on orange paper in your What's Up Today. In that survey, we're trying to get a feel for the totality of the population of Integrity. And we want to survey you to find out how the economy has affected you. We are interested in that. We don't want you to put your name unless you just want to. We're not interested in that. We want to see what the collective impact has been and is on the people in the Integrity family. And you know, we recognize that when many of you fill that out, it's going to make even less sense for you to even think about EMO. You didn't even think about maybe some of the other things that God might be challenging you to do in a time like this. But you know, that's what real faith is about. It's moving through when circumstances don't make sense. If you would be willing to pray that prayer this week, God, what areas are fives? What areas are sixes? Show me how to make the five sixes. We'd love to pray for you. Just check that on your connection card. Let me pray for you as we leave today. God, thank you for your word, for the way that you work through your people. Thank you, God, for allowing us to simply be the hope of the world. God, forgive us for the times when we don't embrace that, when we fail to see the reality of that, and we fail to realize it. God, may we truly seek to live life in the multiplicative stage and not just the additive phase. God, may we learn how to move forward in a way that's positive and that will grow your kingdom because you have made us the hope of the world. For it's in Christ's name. Amen. Hey, thanks for being here today. I appreciate it a lot. I hope you have a great day and a great week. Don't forget to leave your connection cards that Billy told you about as well as your EMO commitments if you're ready to make that in the boxes in the back along with your regular tithes and offerings. Please don't forget that today. They're in the boxes on either side of the door as you leave. Have a safe trip home. And a fun afternoon and a fun week. God bless. Bye-bye.